Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Push Podcast.
Welcome.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Sydney.
And this is hopefully your one-stop shop for all things evidence, gynecologic, and birthing health related.
Yeah. We're so excited to have you guys back. We are going to be talking today all about the husband stitch.
Very controversial topic.
Very controversial all over social media. So we really wanted to dive into this and really explore it and figure out, you know, where it came from.
Yep.
What it's about. What does it mean? Is it a real thing that's clinically practiced? And then why it's important to talk about as well.
So, Sydney, you've been seeing this all over social media, right?
Yes. All over my socials, people commenting that they had the husband stitch without their knowledge, without their consent, people explaining their stories about husband stitch, about their recovery postpartum with perineal tearing. I see it all the time on TikTok, on Instagram, people commenting, asking me questions about this. So I really wanted to dive into this topic with you, especially as an OBGYN who performs repairs after delivery.
I do
exactly what happens. And I really think you're going to be able to shed a lot of light on this topic. And yeah.
I do. Well, I hope so. And I have to say, I learned a lot about this as well in researching this topic for our podcast today.
Yes.
I think coming into this, I had a little bit of like a split bias. On the one hand, I think as a cisgendered woman, I felt very triggered by the concept of something being done to my body without my consent for the pleasure of like a cisgendered male, even if that person was my like wonderful husband, right?
Yes.
But on the other side, as a like, from a purely clinical perspective, I think I was very confused because I have never been taught a husband stitch. And the more I thought about it, the more I couldn't really conceptualize what that would even look like.
Yeah.
So full disclosure, I actually don't know how to perform a husband stitch. And I wondered who does, right? Yeah. And who are these providers that are doing this and doing this to, you know, birthing parents without their consent?
Yeah, which is the important part that I think even when I was exploring it and hearing about it online and honestly in practice from from husbands who who asked these these things, it kind of always made me confused because I didn't know that this was something that was performed. And then, you know, I talked to you and you explained that no, this isn't exactly something that you're taught in medical school.
No,
it's not something that's routinely taught. This is why we want to talk about the history of where this actually came from, because it's not something that's taught.
Definitely not. And again, my like my knee-jerk reaction to the husband stitch as a clinician was this isn't a thing. But let's delve into it. Let's assess the evidence. Let's see.
Because there's a lot of people who are saying that they have had a husband stitch and they experienced it. And I think that is valid enough to explore it and figure out exactly what this is, right? And,
So I started as I was trying to figure out what are the origins of this? What is the evidence for it? I am fortunate as a provider and as a member of a university to have access to databases, right? And I would love to delve into in a future episode of evidence appraisal in and of itself. But the first step really in anyone being able to research a topic from a clinical perspective is to be able to access the studies themselves. So again, I have access to databases. So I went to PubMed, which is my kind of go-to for like an initial quick search. And I typed in the husband stitch, just plain, no advanced searching. And there were six results that came up.
Only six.
Six results. So for contrast, I then searched in episiotomy, which is the surgical incision that would be made occasionally
during
at the time of birth.
Yeah.
And that came back with 4,309 results.
Woo, that's a big difference.
Perineal tear, just in and of itself.
Yeah.
So again, just the obstetrical tear that often happens at the back of our vagina during a childbirth. That came up with 2,303 results.
Wow.
And then obstetrical anal sphincter injury, which is the medical term for a more significant third or fourth degree tear.
Yeah.
That came up with 1,836 results. Wow. So comparatively, really not a whole lot of data or evidence.
Six.
And this is in one of our like major medical databases.
Yes.
Now there are tons of databases that exist out there for all different areas of research, right?
Yeah.
So humanities have their own, things like engineering have their own. This is just one of many databases that exist, but it is, again, one that I would typically expect a study to be indexed in if it was addressing obstetrical practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I turned to Google and started
Good old Google. Not ChatGPT?
Also ChatGPT. ChatGPT is my friend. Yes. She and I have had some great conversations.
Oh, yes.
And she helps me to me wrap my brain around issues all the time. She is a great email concierge, I will say.
Yes.
I know that's not a hot take,
but I agree with you.
Yeah.
So what did Google say?
So I tried to kind of search through what was coming up. And I have to say, when you search on Google, completely different story, right? Immediately, there's there's a ton of results coming up.
Yeah.
And most of them are people's experiences.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the difference when you go on to social media to look up and research things versus or Google for this instance. It's all patient experiences.
Tons of hits, news articles, Reddit stories, all sorts of things that are describing this concept, right?
Yeah.
And it all kind of centers around a tightening of the vagina, of the perineum, that's done predominantly without someone's consent. For the pleasure of another person. Sorry, guys. Technical difficulties. Give me a second. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you for staying with us. We're back.
We're back after a brief intermission.
A brief intermission where I like hacked a lung out and needed another glass of water.
We're good now, though.
Now we're good. So I think that we were kind of trying to get to the root of where this term first started appearing in the literature. And it's actually like really hard to chase down. It seems like the first descriptions of it really have been anecdotal, right? And it's been from women and birthing people who have been describing this like really classic conversation between predominantly like a male authoritative obstetrical provider and a husband who may or may not be good-naturedly joking about adding an extra stitch for him, wink, wink, nudge. For presumably his pleasure afterwards. And again, I think it like kind of assumes this inherent like laxity of the vaginal tissue
after childbirth.
Which is not necessarily the case and is a whole separate podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with your vagina after you've had a vaginal delivery or a C-section for that matter.
And if you ask a lot of, like if you ask your partner, does it feel different after birth? A lot of times, at least from what I've seen and heard, a lot of times it feels the same. So.
But we digress.
Anyways. Okay. We're not men actually, but still.
still
important to note that it does not completely stretch out to size of a baby forever.
No, do not assume that your vagina or your vulva, which are two separate structures, are inherently irrevocably altered.
Yes.
Although they may look and feel different to some people, that is not the case for everybody.
Exactly. So. Everyone is so unique and different.
So unique. So the first place that the term the husband stitch, it seems, started to come out in spite of like this tightening process being described previously, really is, again, it's kind of in the precursors to your socials, right? And like online health forums, right? That women were discussing things, chat rooms, Facebook, right?
Yeah. Explaining their experiences.
Patient advocacy spaces, right? Yeah. And also in feminist writing more generally, that was talking about the medical patriarchy and this concept of obstetrical violence, right? Yeah. Or again, like physical alterations done to women and birthing people without their consent.
And historically also most OBGYNs being male providers.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, less of it, like there's more female OBGYNs nowadays, but I think historically predominantly men, correct?
For sure. And you can see, I think in medicine generally, the roots of paternalism, mm-hmm. right? And of significant ethical considerations of consent run mm-hmm. deep,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
And so it's very easy now as yes. a modern provider to feel a little bit defensive mm-hmm. when we talk about people not trusting us, mm-hmm. right? Because so many of us are genuinely just here to serve our patients.
Yeah.
A lot of the things I think in general that people describe, husband stitch or not,
yes.
As, you know, unnecessary interventions are not things I want to do.
Yeah.
Number one, because my patient's experience is really, really important to me.
Yeah.
But also at the most selfish root, because I don't want to do things if I don't have to.
Yeah.
Right. My yeah. favorite delivery is a spontaneous, easy vaginal delivery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We all want a floor.
That's what
full
we want
of,
for everyone.
That is what we want for everyone and for us.
And for us. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But, we don't want the stress.
But we are trained yeah. to also know what to do if that
exactly.
is not the case.
Exactly. 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 We train for the worst and we hope for the best.
Exactly.
And that's really how all of us operate.
Every doctor. And that's how every doctor should operate. Right. Yeah. And every provider in medicine for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There was then a 2017 short story called okay. The Husband Stitch mm. that talks again about a concept surrounding the actual husband stitch or tightening in an obstetrical context is really yes. like a shorter version of this greater discussion of women's sexual autonomy in the short story.
Yeah.
I did read the whole thing actually as part of
how
my
long
deep
was this
dive.
Short story?
I mean, it was short. It was yeah. a short story. It was yeah. a short story, but it was a great read. Highly recommend.
From 2017.
2017. Okay, Carmen Maria Machado is the author.
Okay.
And again, fictionalizes this concept as part of a broader exploration of bodily autonomy.
Autonomy.
Medically, again, we return to this search, right? With yeah. PubMed, it's not broadly acknowledged in the literature.
Yeah.
Right? It's not specifically called out in any guideline.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we do see, even in medical literature, this discussion mm-hmm. of a husband stitch
yep.
Indirectly, particularly when we're talking about over repair of perineal tears mm-hmm. or overly tight perineal suturing, right?
Okay.
Dyspareunia or pain with sex,
yeah,
particularly postpartum,
yeah,
right? And then also in a broader discussion of consent and transparency in the obstetrical process and specifically with respect to perineal repairs.
Yeah.
So, Sid, what do you think?
Yeah.
Does this happen and have you seen this?
Yes, I would say that it happens. I think online, a lot of people are commenting things like, I'm having painful sex postpartum, or mm-hmm. I'm having so-and-so issues, or, you know, my vagina feels different. It feels tighter. It feels something's off. And then they say, I think I had the husband stitch done to me and yeah. I didn't know it. That
yeah.
is a very common theme that I see all across social media. Have I ever seen a provider do this quote unquote husband stitch? No. I don't know. That's not a thing, like you said. That is not something that's practiced or taught.
Yeah.
Have I heard husbands say, hey, doc, can you throw in an extra stitch? Yes, I have heard that before.
Yeah, same.
It has happened quite a few times. I mean, it's not an everyday occurrence.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But it has happened. And
yeah.
usually, you know, awkwardly, we laugh and move along because
yeah.
that's not... We don't really know how to handle that.
Which probably we shouldn't, right? Like,
we
like,
should
I'm
address
sure,
it.
I think,
but at the moment,
yeah.
the baby had just come out. Usually, you know, you don't want to be like bringing the mood down necessarily, but.
Totally. And sometimes I feel like we as providers kind of fall into this like customer's always right kind of mindset
yes.
too.
Yes.
We're like trying not to. What's the word I'm looking for? Like
make them angry
or
challenge them in
yeah,
any way, because it is a customer service role that we still
exactly
are in as
exactly
nurses or doctors.
And I'm sure as two young women too, like we probably
yes.
can't understate the impact of like our yeah. enculturation, right?
Yeah.
To be,
yeah.
Collegial, to be
yeah.
accommodating, to be all of those things, even when somebody is saying something that we really
yes.
find distasteful. And I have to say,
exactly.
I don't just cringe. I find it really off-putting,
yes.
to say the least.
Yeah.
When somebody implies even that we would be complicit in something like that.
Exactly. And especially without the wife, in this instance,
yeah.
the wife's consent to this
yeah.
or knowing that it's even going on, because mm-hmm. usually at the time they're completely wrapped up in, you know, what just happened to them. They're in shock usually after just having given birth, and they're not really in a place to be able to know what's going on around them and to be able to consent to anything revolving that. And it's a really tricky subject to address in the delivery room. That could be a whole other thing to talk about. But I think what's important to kind of talk about now is, like you said, the perennial, which I know I say perennial really funny.
Perennial?
I don't know.
I made fun of it
constantly. So I'm so sorry. You guys can comment it down below. I am going to say it funny.
You know what I have found globally, as this brief sidebar, like as I engage in more of an international space in my field more and more, everybody pronounces things differently.
Miso,
right?
Is
like,
one. Do you say miso or miso or miso?
I say miso.
Yeah. See, everyone, I think it's miso, but I've heard that's a medication. But anyways, anyways, I say it funny, but just it's like you said earlier, so I don't know a lot about this. So maybe you can talk to everyone about it, but how the healing is afterwards and the importance of, you know, following up with your providers if there is, you know, the perennial sutures are too tight and that's maybe causing some of the discomfort that they're having. It's, you know, how do you avoid doing that? How do you, like, just talk more about that? Because I feel like in some instances, I'm not, you know, downplaying patients' experiences, but I do feel like sometimes that is maybe what is happening is, you know, their healing process has, something's gone wrong, and they maybe start Googling it. And then on Google comes up with all of these patient stories of the husband stitch. And then they maybe say to themselves, oh, that must be what I have.
Sent me, right?
Yeah.
100%. So as I've mentioned, I have not been trained at any point to do a husband stitch. And so I really can only kind of guesstimate what we may be talking about and extrapolate from my greater experience with respect to pain with sex after vaginal deliveries and like the general causes for that.
Yeah.
So I think as a baseline for this conversation, we should have a bit of a better understanding of what are we talking about when we're talking about an obstetrical tear. And again, I think you and I both want to get into this in a lot more detail in future episodes, especially with respect to like tearing and episiotomies and instrumentation in general.
Yes.
But super briefly, I did prepare an illustration for this episode.
Perfect.
So I will put it.
We'll pop
somewhere up here.
If you guys are listening, you can tune into our YouTube. Our YouTube is at the Push Pod, so you can see our visuals if you are listening. Obviously, if you're driving, do not pull that up. But anyways,
do not pull that up while you're driving, friends.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about a tear of the vagina in general, right? Like the thing that would be repaired in which this husband stitch would take place.
Yeah.
We're really talking about a tear through kind of three main muscle groups in the perineum.
Yeah.
I should say as well, a first degree tear would just be through the mucosa, or kind of like the skin on the inside of the vagina.
Which is the most common tear that you would see. Is it a first degree or a second degree?
Probably. It depends on whether this is someone's first delivery or not, I would say.
True. But that's the most minor kind
most
of tear.
Most minor, easiest to recover from for the most part.
For most people.
A second degree tear is when that tears down into kind of the two first muscle bodies of the vulva and the pelvic floor. So those would be the bulbocavernosus or spongiosus muscles, which kind of arc around the vagina as a whole.
Yep.
And the transverse perinealis, which is kind of a horizontal muscle that goes just underneath the vagina.
Interesting.
So second degree tear will tear into those muscle bellies. Again, that's probably the most common degree of tear
that you see.
Exactly. And in general, we find that these heal quite well, especially when they're identified and repaired adequately by an experienced provider.
Yeah.
Now then we get into the more complicated tears, which are ones that involve the anal sphincter.
That's the either third the external, and fourth degree,
exactly.
Right?
Either the external anal sphincter, the internal anal sphincter, which would compromise our third degree tears, or into the rectal mucosa itself, which would be a fourth degree tear. These are our more complicated obstetrical anal sphincter injuries and certainly require really thoughtful reapproximation and prompt identification. So the number one factor that we have found impacts how people do afterwards and whether they experience pain and symptoms and side effects is whether or not it was identified appropriately at the time of delivery.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So some people, some providers might be identifying it as a
second degree
when it really is a and third miss degree.
The fact that it's
and there's different classes of third degree tests
depending
so there's just so many different layers and things to look at.
And there are different ways to repair them, different suture materials you might use, different techniques depending on. It's not
every
like you just kind of
different,
or stitch right through or everything.
Midwife. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So recognizing it and being able to appropriately repair it is super, super, super important.
Yeah.
So what could we be talking about with an extra stitch? Well, I've done this to Sydney a bunch of times. I've shown her like there's no just like one stitch that I could take through after I've repaired everything that like makes things tighter.
Yeah.
So I could put a stitch right now through my arm. I don't know if you can see me, guys, on the screen. Obviously, if you're listening on the podcast. But I'm just kind of like pinching my skin together, right? I could put a stitch through that right now and leave it for a week and then cut it out and my skin would just fall back the way that it was previously.
It's not going to attach spontaneously on its own.
Exactly. You cannot like meld to epithelialized surfaces or like skin covered surfaces together.
That aren't meant to go together.
That aren't meant to go together, right? You have to have like a cut that's made through them. So first and foremost, you can't just like throw a stitch through and tighten things and expect it to stay tight.
And I remember when I first brought up the husband stitch to you, I remember you saying, I don't know what people are sewing together. Like you,
I remember you saying
something along those lines. You're like, what are they stitching?
Because I just like practically what would we be doing, right? Like what would we be doing?
Yeah.
And so the more I thought about it, then I thought, okay, so in the world of urogynecology, which full disclosure, I am not a urogynecologist. I'm a minimally invasive surgeon.
Yeah.
But in the world of urogynecology, as part of the repair for a pelvic organ prolapse, you may do what's called a perineurophy, which basically involves a laceration at the back of the vagina, very similar to where it would occur for an obstetrical tear, and reapproximation of some of those same muscles we've already talked about to tighten the vagina and shorten the genital hiatus or the opening of the vagina, which again are like important structures for preventing and addressing pelvic organ prolapse.
Gotcha.
So in theory, could I at the time of an obstetrical tear over tighten those muscles and change the size of the orifice of the vagina? I guess I could.
You could.
Right?
But this would probably be an extensive surgery or no?
I mean, again,
like, is it something that you can just throw in at the end of a repair? Like, or is it this going to take time?
Listen, if I was going to do a proper perineurophy, right, it would involve a bit of a different procedure than what I would do traditionally just for an obstetrical tear.
Yeah.
Right? Because really with an obstetrical tear, we're just trying to like bring cut edge to cut edge.
So that
right?
It can
or
heal
torn
back
edge
together.
To torn edge. Yeah. Exactly. So that it can heal back together. We're really not trying to like do anything crazy. We're just trying to like bring nature back together.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I tell my students all the time when I'm teaching them, like obstetrical tears can look really overwhelming.
Yeah.
But we're just bringing like to like, right? You're just color matching. You're just structure matching. You're just bringing things back together at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I do think it is possible to over tighten by mistake, right? I think if you're not mindful to, again, like what you're reapproximating, if you don't have an experienced provider that's doing it, sometimes, I know this sounds kind of crazy to listeners and viewers at home who don't have, you know, obstetrical backgrounds, but it sometimes is hard to tell what is like to like, right? Like what exactly tore or was cut from what in the context of an obstetrical tear.
Because what I've seen sometimes, you're looking and you're just like, what? Like sometimes like seeing the before and afters. I'm always like, wow, that, it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, I'm not trained to do the sutures and do all of that kind of stuff, but I assist with it and it is a lot. It is a lot.
So long story short, is there like one simple stitch that can be done in a husband tear? No. Yeah. Or a husband stitch rather? No. Could someone be doing like a perineurophy? Possibly, but probably not. Could somebody inadvertently reapproximate the tissue in such a way that it tightens the genital hiatus or shortens it inappropriately? That I think is maybe more the culprit, at least in certainly ones that are like accidental in modern times now, right? Okay. So can you have a misappropriated vaginal tear? Yes, unfortunately. Mm. I don't think that that is common, but it does happen. And I have seen some of these patients in consultation and had to take them back to the OR to fix these afterwards.
After. And when do you usually see these issues arise? Is it at the 6-week checkup, or is it months down the road? Like, or is everyone different?
I mean, everybody is different, but honestly, Sydney, it's usually when people start trying to have sex again, right? And by sex, I mean like penetrative intercourse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's usually when people find the most common, you know, symptom I find that people are describing when we're talking about this, like, again, the husband stitch or like tightening is pain.
Pain.
Right? It's pain with sex. It's a change in the way that we experience it.
Yeah.
And that can be caused by a bunch of different things. And so my main message, I think, that I would want people to know who may be listening, who may be experiencing pain after sex, or who may think that they have a husband stitch. I can't speak to what happened in anybody's delivery, whether they did or did not have that.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely recommend seeing a gynecologist, either your obstetrical provider or a new gynie, because lots of things can cause pain after sex.
Yeah.
We can have, again, misappropriation of the tissue, right? So things can literally be too tight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that does have a solution, right? Okay. Either with things like, you know, stretching, dilatation, pelvic floor physiotherapy, or occasionally a surgical
repair. Pelvic floor physio. Right? That is all, like, everyone, I feel like,
brief
needs
that. Shout out to the pelvic floor physiotherapies out there. Goodness. Literal angels on this earth.
Yes.
I saw pelvic floor physiotherapy after my delivery. I, like, am obsessed with her. She's so great.
Yeah.
And I think everyone needs to see one.
Yeah.
Sometimes as well, people can have something called granulation tissue, which basically is like a premature tissue.
Yeah.
But when, as a wound is starting to heal, as part of normal wound healing, your body lays down this stuff called granulation tissue, and it's kind of like red and lumpy and easily bleedy.
Yeah.
And it's basically just serves to like protect against infection and start the preliminary process of like blood vessel lay down.
Yeah. And building good tissue.
Exactly. Building good tissue. And that's ultimately covered over in the case of the vagina by things like mucosa, right? Yeah. Or the skin of the vagina.
Yeah.
Sometimes though, your body kind of goes a little crazy for whatever reason, right? Either it's not really brought together well, or just an immune process occurs. And, and you can have granulation tissue that sits on the outside. That can totally cause pain.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we fix obstetrical tears.
Yeah.
Sometimes the nerves just freak out a little bit, right? And so our body is full of these sensory nerves and our skin is full of them. And sometimes those nerves can perceive pain even when there's not a painful stimulus there.
Interesting.
And sometimes that can feel like sharp or burning pain, sometimes like a tearing sensation, even with very minor pressure or something like sexual intercourse, right?
Yeah.
And then as well, we can also have pelvic floor dysfunction more broadly, right? The pelvis is full of muscles.
Yeah.
And childbirth is inherently traumatic to those muscles, right?
Yeah. Childbirth and pregnancy too, right?
Like totally. If I had a joint injury to my shoulder, I think it makes a lot of sense to us that the muscles around that joint would be impacted, right? Even weeks after the injury occurred, right?
Yeah.
But we don't think about the pelvic floor in the same way.
No.
Right? And so oftentimes people do have pelvic floor dysfunction where the muscles aren't working appropriately. They're overly tense. They're misfiring. And that has, you know, a solution in physiotherapy in the same way that other muscle groups and other places in the body would be. So it's impossible for me to know just hearing that somebody has pain after childbirth, especially with sex, whether it's one of these things or something else entirely. But suffice to say, the differential is super broad. Right.
But there is a solution too, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you can reach out to a provider,
and 100%.
Like your OBGYN or someone else. And,
and
there's solutions to this, right? You don't have to live your life in pain forever. And, you know.
No, please don't.
There's solutions. So
please don't.
Yeah.
Now, that we do have evidence for, right? Like the amount of people that experience pain after sex. So there have been a few good systematic reviews. And systematic reviews really are when we try to compile not just one study, right? But multiple studies that looked at the same thing by multiple different centers. And we put all that data in a pool.
Yeah.
And then we do something called a meta-analysis, right? Where basically we're able to combine that data to get an even bigger data set to say, okay, is what these people have found in their trials and their studies true or not true,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a really powerful way to assess a topic, and it offers us a lot higher quality of evidence.
Yes.
So there have been some systematic reviews done on pain after obstetrical tears.
Yeah.
And some of these, including one by Mens Rea et al. In 2019, found that at 3 months postpartum, the prevalence of pain after sex, do you know what the high end of prevalence of pain would be? Guess. 3 months after a vaginal delivery.
I have no idea.
And this is just a spontaneous vaginal birth. This is not like vacuum or forceps.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And they're still having like...
3 months, guess.
3 months, I would guess probably like... 30%?
Yeah, 36%, 17 to 36%.
Hmm.
Now, that number does start to drop as we approach 6 and 12 months postpartum.
Yeah.
But suffice to say,
yeah,
pain after vaginal deliveries is unfortunately common, right? And I don't think that 36% of people in these huge data sets, right, have experienced husband stitches. I think, like, fortunately, right?
Yes.
Right? Yes. I think that the problem is a little bit bigger, right? Yeah. In that, like, we don't talk about pain after delivery as a common topic, right?
No.
And women don't feel as though their pain will be taken seriously.
Because it usually isn't taken seriously, right?
Exactly, like, exactly.
Which is horrible, but it's the truth. And especially when it comes to intercourse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Postpartum especially. That's just, I think a lot of women feel shame to talk about it too, and to bring it up to their providers. It's an embarrassing topic. You know, you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to bring it up. You also don't want to necessarily have that issue with your partner too. Like that's, and anyways, it's a whole thing, but it's okay. You're proof that your patients do talk to you about it and there are solutions for it. So
yes. Please, I promise you, of all your providers, your gynecologist is probably the person that will be hardest to embarrass.
Absolutely. Trust me. Yes. I know so many OBGYNs, and there's no topic off limits.
Honestly, to an uncomfortable degree.
Like, yes.
I probably have no conception now of what appropriate dinner topics are.
Yes.
Like, I probably make people uncomfortable in social situations more than I like.
An OBGYN I used to work with, who I think you might know. She used to advocate for using
Crisco. I would love to guess online,
Crisco.
Offline, who this is.
She would advocate for using Crisco as lubricant.
I bet I can guess.
This was just a conversation at the nursing station. I don't even know why it was brought up.
That's so funny. That's so funny. I mean,
so you do not advocate for Crisco?
Listen, do I know? Can I point to evidence immediately that it's unsafe?
No.
Do I recommend using really most food products as lubricant?
No.
I do know that some people that, you know, have recommended coconut oil.
Yes, I've heard that.
But honestly, just go to a drugstore or a sex store
and buy medical-grade lubricant.
Buy lubricant.
Yes.
So listen.
Anyways, keep going.
So overarching, you know, again, this, I think irrespective of how common the husband stitch may be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what we can kind of say overall is that while this does not seem to be a standardized medical practice, what matters, I think, and what I think we should be focusing on most in this discussion is that women believe it's happened to them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Which again, I think that inherent distrust, in spite of the fact that for me, at least, I hope anyway, it's mostly inherited from my discipline as opposed to something that I have necessarily like engendered with my patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's still something that we have to own as providers, I think, right?
Yeah.
Is that like systematically we have not listened to women's pain, right?
Not at all.
We have not done good studies on birthing parents, on, you know, gynecologic organs in general.
Yeah.
And I think that we're still kind of feeling the aftershocks of that. And that's probably fair.
Yeah.
Right? That people don't feel that they can always talk to us about it or feel that it is so possible that something like this could happen to them without their consent, right? And again, I think that says something about the way that in general we talk about concepts like consent and sex and pain, especially in postpartum care.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is you know, kind of the reason why we wanted to bring this episode to light as well is because we want to open that conversation and make sure it's known that it's important to talk about your pain. Mm-hmm. And hopefully one day we will get to a point where every provider is listening to every patient that walks through the doors who says, I'm having so-and-so symptoms.
Yep.
And believe them right away. But we're getting there slowly but surely. I know there's more pain management options happening for IUD insertions nowadays, which mm-hmm. is a huge step. So hopefully it will continue for postpartum, you know, intercourse pain with intercourse postpartum. But I had a question for you in terms of the, you know, perennial tightening, all that kind of stuff that we were talking about. Is this similar to what people call like the vaginal rejuvenation that you see online and that people get? Like, what is that? And how is that in relation to this?
I mean, yes and no, right? Like, so vaginal rejuvenation, which I'm sorry to anybody, any providers out there. Like, I know that there are actually lots of really caring providers in the area of aesthetic gynecology, right?
Yep.
And so I don't want to insult anybody. I really hate the term vaginal rejuvenation, though, because I hate the concept that
your vagina needs to be rejuvenated, right? Like, especially after birth, right? And we talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
But that's not a thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be. But anyways, I know I just wanted to bring it up because I see that a lot online as well.
Totally. So yes, something like a perineurophy could be a part for some providers who are doing these of the concept of a vaginal rejuvenation.
Yeah.
I will say again, as with so many things, we're really just starting to get into the meat of doing actual research on any of these topics. And there is not a lot of good quality data on vaginal rejuvenation in general on the patients that are seeking this out and on their symptoms and the impact of the surgery on them afterwards, right?
So is it usually like prolapse that you would be addressing in that situation? Like you know, that would be a whole separate surgery that you would be dealing with, but this is more an aesthetic thing that some providers may be doing.
Well, aesthetic, but also I do feel that, you know, anecdotally, patients who are seeking vaginal rejuvenation are also often talking about sexual function, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's where as gynecologists, we kind of shy away from this topic because really like sexual function is functional. It's not aesthetic, right? And there isn't good evidence to suggest that a vaginal rejuvenation improves sexual function. Mm-hmm. However, like we're really, again, just starting to get into the meat of assessing this. And I think that a first step, at least to addressing this in a considerate way, irrespective of your feelings on vaginal rejuvenation, is to believe patients' experiences, right? Sex is important and it's essential to many people's relationships, right? And if people are experiencing difficulties with sex, whether it's the sensation that something feels different after having their children, after going through menopause and they're looking for vaginal rejuvenation or tightening, or again, that people are having pain postpartum.
Yeah.
I think taking that pain and that function seriously is the first step in order to, you know, number one, treat your patient, but also to begin to ask the questions that will allow us to develop better evidence in the future that we can feel like we can stand on a little bit more firmly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's the main point to get across, right? Is that your pain is real and we're working towards hopefully finding solutions for that. And if you're having symptoms, we need to treat those symptoms and we need to find solutions for that, right?
For sure.
And, you know, the husbands in the room who say these awful, awful comments, like throwing in an extra stitch, that needs to stop. But I mean,
for sure. Well, the one real article that came up on PubMed when I did my stitch was a paper by a researcher called Sarah Rodriguez in the Bulletin of the History of Medicine called The Creation and Circulation of Evidence and Knowledge in American Medicine Through the Lens of the Husband Stitch. Mm. And she talks about exactly this thing. She's interviewed some doctors who say functionally, again, like it doesn't really happen for me, for my practice. It's not necessarily something that I do, but they describe again this triad, this tableau of the authoritative male physician, the joking husband, and the silent laboring woman.
Yes.
And she uses this as an example and a way to dissect and discuss how research and evidence has evolved with respect to the balance of authoritativeness of paternalism in medicine and of us as providers just kind of deciding something is good for women as opposed to actually asking people their experiences, getting their consent, having them be active participants in the process, and then doing good quality studies to determine the outcomes, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, again, I think that's kind of like an overarching theme in our discussion today is that the husband stitch or not, well, of course, it is a huge problem if that has been done to somebody in modern times without their consent.
Yeah.
The bigger point is what this says about our society, what this says about the way that we conduct our research, and what this says about the trust our patients don't have in their providers with respect to their obstetrical care.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, which is so sad to think about. That's awful. I really hope that that can change.
Yeah,
I really do.
I think so too. And I think that this is the first step, right? Yeah. Is having these discussions, is talking about this.
Yep.
And rebuilding those blocks one by one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, guys, if you have any thoughts, any feelings on this, if this is something you feel is done in your hospitals, if
talk about it.
Message us.
Email us. You can email us at askthepushpod@gmail.com. So ask the push pod and we will consolidate all of your feedback. Mm-hmm. We will listen to you. We want to know your stories. We want to hear your experiences. We really do, because I know your experience matters. It really does. And we're here.
Yeah.
We're here to read through it.
100%. And while we obviously cannot be providers to anyone over the internet, right? Yes. We cannot necessarily give medical advice or care.
Yes.
We do want to create a space where these conversations can happen and where we can normalize this concept of talking about our postpartum experiences, even the really bad ones, right?
And hopefully giving you the tools that you need and that you can use to bring back to your own provider and ask the questions for yourself and hopefully find a solution for your lived experience. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope this wasn't, you know, too much information, but I hope it was the perfect amount. I feel like it's, you know, we could go on for hours and hours and hours about this topic.
Yeah, you literally have to, like, I need one of those like hooks to like drag me off the stage.
Exactly. But we really appreciate you all being here. Again, you can find us on Instagram at the.push.podcast. Let me try that again. You can find us on Instagram at the.push.podcast. And we will be posting there every update, any new updates of when we're going to be posting new episodes and all that kind of stuff. And we look forward to hearing from you guys again soon.
We will see you next time.
Bye.